Listening Library presents The Scorch Trials by James Dashner. Read for you by Mark Deakins. Chapter 1. She spoke to him before the world fell apart.
"Hey, are you still asleep?"
Thomas shifted in his bed, felt a darkness around him like air turned solid, pressing in. At first he panicked. His eyes snapped open as he imagined himself back in the box, that horrible cube of cold metal that had delivered him to the glade and the maze. But there was a faint light, and lumps of dim shadow gradually emerged throughout the huge room. Bunk beds, dressers, the soft breaths and gurgly snores of boys deep in slumber. Relief filled him. He was safe now. Rescued and delivered to this dormitory. No more worries. No more grievers. No more death.
"Tom?"
A voice in his head. A girl's. Not audible, not visible. But he heard it all the same, though never could he have explained to anyone how it worked. Exhaling a deep breath, he relaxed into his pillow. His razor-edged nerves settling down from that fleeting moment of terror. He spoke back, forming the words with his thoughts.
"Teresa? What time is it?" "No idea," she replied. "But I can't sleep. I probably dozed for an hour or so, maybe more. I was hoping you were awake to keep me company."
Thomas tried not to smile, even though she wouldn't be able to see it. It would be embarrassing all the same. "Didn't give me much choice in the matter, did you? Kinda hard to sleep when someone's talking directly into your skull."
Wah, go back to bed then."
"No, I'm good." He stared at the bottom of the bunk above him, featureless and darkly fuzzy in the shadow, where Minho was currently breathing like a guy with ungodly amounts of phlegm lodged in his throat.
"What have you been thinking about?"
"What do you think?" Somehow she projected a jab of cynicism into the words.
"I keep seeing grievers, their disgusting skin and blubber bodies, all those metal arms and spikes. It was way too close for comfort, Tom. How are we going to get something like that out of our heads?"
Thomas knew what he thought. Those images would never leave. The gladers would be haunted by the horrible things that had happened in the maze for the rest of their lives. He figured that most, if not all of them, would have major psychological problems. Maybe even go completely nutso. And above it all, he had one image burned into his memories as strongly as a branded mark from a searing hot iron. His friend, Chuck, stabbed in the chest, bleeding, dying as Thomas held him. Thomas knew he would never forget that. But what he said to Teresa was,
"It'll go away. Just takes a little time, that's all."
"You're so full of it," she said.
"I know."
How ridiculous was it that he loved hearing her say something like that to him? That her sarcasm meant things were going to be okay.
"You're an idiot," he told himself, then hoped she didn't hear that thought.
"I hate that they separated me from you guys," she said. Thomas understood why they had, though. She was the only girl, and the rest of the gladers were teenage boys, a bunch of shanks they didn't trust yet.
"Guess they were protecting you."
"Yeah, I guess." Melancholy seeped into his brain with her words, stuck to them like syrup.
"But it sucks being alone after everything we went through."
"Where'd they take you, anyway?" She sounded so sad that he almost wanted to get up and look for her, but he knew better.
"Just on the other side of that big common room where we ate last night. It's a small room with a few bunks. I'm pretty sure they locked the door when they left."
"See? Told you they wanted to protect you." Then he quickly added, "Not that you need protecting. I'd put my money on you against at least half these shanks."
"Only half?"
"Okay, 3/4, including me." A long stretch of silence followed, though somehow Thomas could still sense her presence. He felt her. It was almost like how, even though he couldn't see Minho, He knew his friend lay only a few feet above him, and it wasn't just the snoring. When someone is close by, you just know it. Despite all the memories of the last few weeks, Thomas was surprisingly calm, and soon sleep overpowered him once more. Darkness settled on his world, but she was there, next to him, in so many ways. Almost touching. He had no concept of time passing while in that state. Half asleep, half enjoying her presence and the thought that they'd been rescued from that horrible place. That they were safe. That he and Teresa could get to know each other all over again. That life could be good. Blissful sleep. Hazy darkness. Warmth. A physical glow. Almost floating. The world seemed to fade away. All became numb and sweet. And the darkness somehow comforting. He slipped into a dream. He's very young. 4, maybe. 5. Lying in a bed with blankets pulled to his chin. A woman sits next to him, her hands folded in her lap. She has long brown hair, a face just beginning to show signs of age. Her eyes are sad. He knows this, even though she's trying very hard to hide it with a smile. He wants to say something, ask her a question, but he can't. He's not really here, just witnessing it all from a place he doesn't quite understand. She begins to talk, a sound so simultaneously sweet and angry it disturbs him.
I don't know why they chose you, but I do know this. You're special somehow. Never forget that, and never forget how much...
Her voice cracks and tears run down her face.
Never forget how much I love you.
The boy replies, but it's not really Thomas speaking, even though it is him. None of it makes sense.
Are you going to be crazy like all those people on TV, Mommy? Like Daddy?
The woman reaches out and runs her fingers through his hair.
Woman? No. He can't call her that. This is his mother. His mommy. Don't you worry about that, honey, she says. You won't be here to see it.
Her smile has gone away. Too fast, the dream faded into blackness, leaving Thomas in a void with nothing but his thoughts. Had he seen another memory crawl up from the depths of his amnesia? Had he really seen his mom? There'd been something about his dad being crazy. The ache inside Thomas was deep and gnawing, and he tried to sink further into oblivion. Later, how much later he had no idea, Teresa spoke to him again.
Tom, something's wrong.
Chapter 2. That was how it started. He heard Teresa say those three words, but it seemed from far away, as if spoken down a long and cluttered tunnel. His slumber had become a viscous liquid, thick and sticky, trapping him. He became aware of himself, but realized he was removed from the world, entombed by exhaustion. He couldn't wake up.
Thomas!
She screamed it. A piercing rattle in his head. He felt the first trickle of fear, but it was more like a dream. He could only sleep, and they were safe now, nothing to worry about anymore.
Yeah, it had to be a dream. Teresa was fine. They were all fine.
He relaxed again, let himself drown in slumber. Other sounds snuck their way into his consciousness. Thumps. The clang of metal against metal. Something shattering. Boys shouting, more like the echo of shouts, very distant, muted. Suddenly, they became more like screams, unearthly cries of anguish, but still distant, as if he'd been wrapped in a thick cocoon of dark velvet. Finally, something pricked the comfort of sleep. This wasn't right. Teresa had called for him, told him something was wrong. He fought the deep sleep that had consumed him, clawed at the heavy weight pinning him down.
Wake up! He yelled at himself. Wake up!
Then something disappeared from inside him, there one instant, gone the next. He felt as if a major organ had been ripped from his body. It had been her. She was gone. "Teresa!" he screamed out in his mind. "Teresa! Are you there?" But there was nothing, and he no longer felt that comforting sense of her closeness. He called her name again, then again, as he continued to struggle against the dark pull of sleep. Finally, reality swept in, washed away the darkness. Engulfed in terror, Thomas opened his eyes and shot to a sitting position on his bed, scooted out until he got his feet under him and jumped up, looked around. Everything had gone crazy. The other gladers in the room were running around, shouting, and terrible, horrible, awful sounds filled the air, like the wretched squeals of animals being tortured. There was Frypan, pointing out a window, his face pale. Newt and Minho were running to the door. Winston, hands held up to his frightened, acne-plagued face like he'd just seen a flesh-eating zombie. Others stumbling over each other to look out the different windows, but keeping their distance from the glass. Achingly, Thomas realized he didn't even know most of the names of the 20 boys who'd survived the maze, an odd thought to have in the middle of all that chaos. Something at the corner of his eye made him turn to look toward the wall. What he saw immediately wiped away any peace and safety he'd felt talking to Teresa in the night, made him doubt such emotions could even exist in the same world in which he now stood. 3 feet from his bed, draped by colorful curtains, a window looked out into a bright, blinding light. The glass was broken, jagged shards leaning against crisscrossed steel bars. A man stood on the other side, gripping the bars with bloody hands. His eyes were wide and bloodshot, filled with madness. Sores and scars covered his thin, sunburnt face. He had no hair, only diseased splotches of what looked like greenish moss. A vicious slit stretched across his right cheek. Thomas could see teeth through the raw, festering wound. Pink saliva dribbled in swaying lines from the man's chin.
"I'm a crank!" the horror of a man yelled. "I'm a bloody crank!"
And then he started screaming 2 words over and over and over, spit flying with every shriek.
"Kill me! Kill me! Kill me!"
Chapter 3. A hand slammed down on Thomas's shoulder from behind. He cried out and spun around to see Minho staring past him at the maniac screaming through the window.
"They're everywhere," Minho said.
His voice had a gloom to it that perfectly matched how Thomas felt. It seemed as if everything they'd dared hope for the previous night had dissolved to nothing.
"And there's no sign of those Shanks who rescued us," he added.
Thomas had lived in fear and terror the past few weeks, but this was almost too much. To feel safe, only to have that snatched away again. Shocking even himself, though, he quickly set aside that small part of him that wanted to jump back into his bed and bawl his eyes out. He pushed away the lingering ache of remembering his mom and the stuff about his dad and people going crazy. Thomas knew that someone had to take charge. They needed a plan if they were going to survive this, too.
"Have any of them gotten in yet?" he asked,
a strange calm washing over him.
"Do all the windows have these bars?"
Minho nodded toward one of the many lining the walls of the long rectangular room.
"Yeah, it was too dark to notice them last night, especially with those stupid frilly curtains, but I'm sure glad for 'em."
Thomas looked at the gladers around them, some running from window to window to get a look outside, others huddling in small groups. Everyone had a look of half disbelief, half terror.
"Where's Newt?"
"Right here."
Thomas turned to see the older boy, not knowing how he'd missed him.
"What's going on?"
"You think I have a bloody clue? Bunch of crazies want to eat us for breakfast by the looks of it. We need to find another room, have a gathering. All this noise is driving nails through my buggin' skull."
Thomas nodded absently. He agreed with the plan, but hoped Newt and Minho would take care of it. He was eager to make contact with Teresa. He hoped her warning had just been part of a dream, a hallucination from the drug of deep and exhausted slumber. And that vision of his mom. His two friends moved away, calling out and waving their arms to collect gladers. Thomas took a tremulous look back at the shredded madman at the window, then looked away immediately, wishing he hadn't reminded his brain of the blood and torn flesh, the insane eyes, the hysterical screaming.
Kill me! Kill me! Kill me!
Thomas stumbled to the farthest wall, leaned heavily against it.
Teresa, he called out again with his mind. Teresa, can you hear me?
He waited, closing his eyes to concentrate, reaching out with invisible hands, trying to grasp some trace of her. Nothing. Not even a passing shadow or brush of feeling, much less a response.
Teresa,
he said more urgently, clenching his teeth with the effort.
Where are you? What happened?
Nothing. His heart seemed to slow until it almost stopped, and he felt like he'd swallowed a big, hairy lump of cotton. Something had happened to her. He opened his eyes to see the gladers gathered around the green-painted door that led to the common area where they'd eaten pizza the night before. Min-ho was jerking on the round brass handle to no avail. Locked. The only other door was to a shower and locker room, from which no other exits existed. There was that and the windows. All with those metal bars, thank goodness. Each one had raging lunatics screaming and yelling on the other side. Even though worry ate at him like spilled acid in his veins, Thomas gave up momentarily on trying to contact Teresa and joined the other gladers. Newt was having a go at the door, with the same useless result.
It's locked,
he muttered when he finally gave up, his arms falling weakly to his sides.
Really, genius?
Min-ho said, his powerful arms folded and tensed, veins bulging all over the place. Thomas thought for a split second he could actually see the blood pumping through them.
No wonder you were named after Isaac Newton. Such an amazing ability to think.
Newt wasn't in the mood. Or maybe he'd just learned long ago to ignore Min-ho's smart-aleck remarks.
Let's break this bloody handle off.
He looked around as if he expected someone to give him a sledgehammer.
I wish those shuck cranks would shut up,
Min-ho yelled, turning to glower at the closest one, a woman who looked even more hideous than the first man Thomas had seen. A bleeding wound crossed her face, ending on the side of her head.
Cranks,
Frypan repeated. The hairy cook had been silent until then, barely noticeable. Thomas thought he looked even more frightened than when they'd been about to battle the Grievers to escape the maze. Maybe this was worse. When they'd settled into bed last night, everything had seemed good and safe. Yeah, maybe this was worse, to have that suddenly taken away. Min-ho pointed at the screaming bloody woman.
That's what they keep calling themselves. Haven't you heard it?
I don't care if you call them pussy willows, Newt snapped. Find me something to break this stupid door.
Here,
a shorter boy said, carrying a slender but solid fire extinguisher he'd taken off the wall. Thomas remembered seeing it earlier. Again, he felt guilty for not even knowing this kid's name. Newt grabbed the red cylinder, ready to pile-drive the door handle. Thomas stood as close as he could, eager to see what was on the other side of the door, though he had a very bad feeling that whatever it was, they weren't going to like it. Newt lifted the extinguisher, then slammed it down on the round brass handle. The loud crack was accompanied by a deeper crunch, and it took only three more whacks before the entire unit of the handle crashed to the floor with a jangle of broken metal pieces. The door inched outward, cracked open just enough to show darkness on the other side. Newt stood quietly staring at that long, narrow gap of blackness as if he expected demons from the underworld to come flying through. Absently, he handed the extinguisher back to the boy who'd found it.
Let's go,
he said. Thomas thought he heard the slightest quaver in his voice.
Wait, Frypan called out. We sure we want to go out there? Maybe that door was locked for a reason.
Thomas couldn't help but agree. Something felt wrong about this. Min-ho stepped up to stand right next to Newt. He looked back at Frypan, then made eye contact with Thomas.
What else we gonna do? Sit here and wait for those loonies to get in? Come on,
Those freaks aren't breaking through the window bars anytime soon,
Frypan retorted.
Let's just think for a second.
Time for thinking's done,
Minho said. He kicked out with his foot, and the door swung completely open. If anything, it seemed to grow even darker on the other side.
Plus, you should have spoken up before we blasted the lock to bits, Slinthead. Too late now.
I hate when you're right,
Frypan grumbled under his breath. Thomas couldn't quit staring past the open door into the pool of inky darkness. He felt a now all too familiar clench of apprehension, knowing that something had to be wrong or the people who'd rescued them would have come for them a long time ago. But Minho and Newt were right. They had to go out there and find some answers.
Shuck it, Minho said. I'll go first.
Without waiting for a response, he walked through the open door, his body vanishing in the gloom almost instantly. Newt gave Thomas a hesitant look, then followed. For some reason, Thomas thought it should be up to him to go next, so he did. Step by step, he left the dorm room and entered the darkness of the common area, hands reaching out in front of him. The glow of light coming from behind didn't do much to illuminate things. He might as well have been walking with his eyes squeezed shut. And the place smelled. Horrible. Minho yelped up ahead, then called back.
Whoa! Be careful! Something weird's hanging from the ceiling!
Thomas heard a slight squeak or groan, something creaking, as if Minho had bumped into a low-hanging chandelier, sending it swaying back and forth. A grunt from Newt somewhere to the right was followed by the squeal of metal dragging across the floor.
Table, Newt announced. Watch out for tables.
Frypan spoke up behind Thomas.
Does anyone remember where the light switches were?
That's where I'm heading, Newt responded. I swear I remember seeing a set of them somewhere over here.
Thomas continued walking blindly forward. His eyes had adjusted a little. Where before everything had been a wall of blackness, now he could see traces of shadows against shadows. Yet something was off. He was still a little disoriented, but things seemed to be in places they shouldn't be. It was almost as if...
Blah!
Minho groaned, a shudder of repulsion, like he just stepped in a pile of clunk. Another creaking sound cut through the room. Before Thomas could ask what had happened, he bumped into something himself. Hard. Awkwardly shaped. The feel of cloth.
Found it! Newt shouted.
A few clicks were heard. Then the room suddenly blazed with fluorescent lights, temporarily blinding Thomas. He stumbled away from the thing he'd bumped into, rubbing his eyes, ran into another stiff figure, sent it swaying away from him.
Whoa!
Minho yelled. Thomas squinted. His vision cleared. He forced himself to look at the scene of horror around him. Throughout the large room, people hung from the ceiling, at least a dozen. They'd all been strung up by the neck, the ropes twisted and trenched into purple, bloated skin. The stiff bodies swung to and fro ever so slightly, pale pink tongues lolling out of their white-lipped mouths. All of them had eyes open, though glazed over with certain death. By the look of it, they'd been that way for hours. Their clothes and some of their faces looked familiar. Thomas dropped to his knees. He knew these dead people. They were the ones who'd rescued the gladers. Just the day before. Chapter 4 Thomas tried not to look at any of the dead bodies as he stood up. He half walked, half stumbled over to Newt, who was still by the bank of light switches, his terrified gaze darting between the corpses hanging throughout the room. Minho joined them, swearing under his breath. Other gladers were emerging from the dorm room, shouting as they realized what they were seeing. Thomas heard a couple of them throw up, gagging and spitting. He felt the sudden urge himself, but fought it. What had happened? How could everything be taken away from them so fast? His stomach tightened up as despair threatened to bowl him over. Then he remembered Teresa.
Teresa!
He called out with his mind.
Teresa!
Again and again, mentally screaming it with his eyes closed and jaw clenched.
Where are you?
Tommy, Newt said, reaching out to squeeze his shoulder.
What's bloody wrong with you?
Thomas opened his eyes, realized he was doubled over, arms wrapped around his stomach. He slowly straightened, tried to push away the panic eating him inside.
What do you think? Look around us.
Yeah, but you looked like you were in pain or something.
I'm fine. Just trying to reach her in my mind. But I can't. He wasn't fine. He hated reminding the others that he and Teresa could speak telepathically. And if all these people were dead...
We've got to find where they put her,
he blurted out, grasping urgently for a task to clear his mind. He scanned the room, trying his best not to focus on the corpses, looking for a door that might lead to her room. She'd said it was across the common area from where they'd all slept.
There, a yellow door with a brass handle.
He's right,
Minho said to the group.
Spread out! Find her! Might have already.
Thomas was on the move, surprised at how quickly he'd recovered his senses. He ran toward the door, dodging tables and bodies. She had to be in there, safe, like they'd been. The door was closed. That was a good sign. Probably locked. Maybe she'd fallen into a deep sleep like him. That was why she'd been quiet, unresponsive. He had almost reached the door when he remembered that they might need something to break into the room.
Someone grab that fire extinguisher, he yelled over his shoulder.
The smell in the common area was horrendous. He gagged as he sucked in a deep breath.
Winston, go get it, Minho ordered behind him.
Thomas reached the door first and tried the handle. It didn't budge, locked tight. Then he noticed a small, clear plastic display hanging on the wall to the right, about 5 inches square. A sheet of paper had been slipped into the thin slot, several words typed on its surface. Teresa Agnes, Group A, Subject A1. The Betrayer. Oddly, the thing that stood out the most to Thomas was Teresa's last name, or at least what appeared to be her last name. Agnes. He didn't know why, but it surprised him. Teresa Agnes. He couldn't think of anyone within the splotchy knowledge of history floating in his still scarce memories who matched that name. He himself had been renamed after Thomas Edison, the great inventor. But Teresa Agnes? He'd never heard of her. Of course, all their names were more of a joke than anything, probably a callous way for the creators, Wicked or whoever had done this to them, to distance themselves from the real people they'd stolen from real mothers and fathers. Thomas couldn't wait until the day he learned what he'd been called at birth, what name lay stamped in the minds of his parents, whoever they were, wherever they were. The sketchy memories he'd initially regained from going through the changing had made him think that he didn't have parents who loved him, that whoever they were, they didn't want him, that he'd been taken from horrible circumstances. But now he refused to believe it, especially after having dreamed about his mom during the night. Minho snapped his fingers in front of Thomas's eyes.
Hello? Calling Thomas. Not a good time to daydream. Lots of dead bodies. Smells like fry pans pits. Wake up.
Thomas turned to him.
Sorry, just thought it was weird that Teresa's last name was Agnes.
Minho clucked his tongue.
Who cares about that? What's this freaking stuff about her being the betrayer?
And what's Group A, Subject A1 mean?
This was Newt, who handed over the fire extinguisher to Thomas.
Anyway, your turn to break a buggin' door handle.
Thomas grabbed it, suddenly angry at himself for wasting even a few seconds thinking about the stupid label. Teresa was in there, and she needed their help. Trying not to be bothered by the word betrayer, he gripped the cylinder and slammed it against the brass knob. A jolt ran up his arms as the clang of metal against metal rang through the air. He'd felt it give a little, and 2 smashes later the handle fell off and the door popped open an inch or two. Thomas threw the extinguisher to the side and grabbed the door, swung it all the way out. Itchy anticipation mixed with dread at what he might find. He was the first to step into the lighted room. It was a smaller version of the boys' dorm, just 4 bunk beds, 2 dressers, and a closed door,
presumably leading to another bathroom. All the beds were made up nicely, except one. Its blankets tossed to the side, and a pillow hanging off the edge, the sheet rumpled. But there was no sign of Teresa.
"Teresa?"
Thomas called out, his throat straining with panic as he yelled. The swirly, swooshing sound of a toilet flushing came through the closed door, and a sudden relief burst through Thomas. It was so strong he almost had to sit down. She was here. She was safe. He steadied himself and started walking toward the bathroom, but Newt reached out and grabbed his arm.
"You're used to living with a bunch of boys," Newt said. "I don't think it's polite to go stomping into the bloody lady's room. Just wait till she comes out."
"Then we need to get everybody in here and have a gathering," Minho added. "It doesn't stink in here, and there aren't any windows for cranks to scream at us."
Thomas hadn't noticed the lack of windows until that moment, though it should have been the most obvious thing, considering the chaos of their own dorm room. Cranks. He'd almost forgotten.
"I wish she'd hurry up," he murmured.
"I'll get everyone over here," Minho said.
He turned and walked back into the common area. Thomas stared at the bathroom door. Newt and Frypan and a few other gladers pushed their way into the room and took seats on the beds, all of them leaning forward, elbows on knees, rubbing their hands together absently, the anxiety and worry evident in their body language.
"Teresa?" Thomas said in his mind. "Can you hear me?
We're waiting for you out here." No response. And he still felt that bubble of emptiness, as if her presence itself had been permanently taken away. There was a click. The handle on the door to the bathroom turned. Then the door opened, swinging toward Thomas. He stepped forward, ready to pull Teresa into a hug. He didn't care who was there to see it. But the person who walked into the dorm room wasn't Teresa. Thomas stopped mid-stride and almost tripped. Everything inside him seemed to fall. It was a boy. He wore the same kind of clothes they'd all been given the night before, clean pajamas with a button-up shirt and flannel pants, light blue. He had olive skin, and his dark hair was cut surprisingly short. The look of innocent surprise on his face was the only thing that prevented Thomas from grabbing the shank by the collar and shaking him until some answers came out.
"Who are you?"
Thomas asked, not caring that the word sounded harsh.
"Who am I?" the boy responded, somewhat sarcastically. "Who are you?"
Newt had gotten back to his feet, actually standing even closer to the new guy than Thomas was.
"Don't bloody mess around. There are a lot more of us than there are of you. Tell us who you are."
The boy folded his arms, a defiance coming over his whole body.
"Fine. My name's Eris. What else you want to know?"
Thomas wanted to punch the guy, him acting all high and mighty while Teresa was missing.
"How'd you get here? Where's the girl who slept here last night?"
"Girl? What girl? I'm the only one here, and it's been that way since they put me here last night."
Thomas turned to point back in the direction of the door to the common area.
"There's a sign right out there that says this is her room. Teresa Agnes. No mention of a shank named Eris."
Something in his tone must have made the boy realize this wasn't a joke. He held out his hands in a conciliatory gesture.
"Look, man, I don't know what you're talking about. They put me in here last night. I slept in that bed."
He pointed to the one with the rumpled sheet and blanket.
"And I woke up about 5 minutes ago and took a pee. Never heard the name Teresa Agnes in my life. Sorry."
The brief moment of relief Thomas had felt when he'd heard the toilet flush officially shattered. He shared a look with Newt, not knowing what to ask next. Newt shrugged slightly, then turned back to Eris.
"Who put you in here last night?"
Eris threw his arms up in the air, then let them come back down and slap against his sides.
"I don't even know, man. A bunch of people with guns who rescued us told us everything would be okay now."
"Rescued you from what?" Thomas asked. This was getting weird. Really, really weird. Eris looked down at the floor and his shoulders fell. It looked as if a wave of some terrible memory had washed over him. He sighed, then finally looked back up at Thomas and answered.
"From the maze, man. From the maze."
Chapter 5. Something softened in Thomas. This kid wasn't lying. He could just tell. The look of horror that had taken hold of Aris was one he knew well. Thomas had felt it himself, and had seen it on too many other faces. He knew exactly what kind of terrible memories made someone look like that. He also knew that Aris had no clue what had happened to Teresa. "Maybe you should sit down," Thomas said. "I think we have a lot to talk about."
"What do you mean?" Aris asked. "Who are you guys? Where'd you come from?"
Thomas let out a slight laugh.
"The maze. The Grievers, Wicked, you name it."
So much had happened, where could he start? Not to mention that worry over Teresa was making his head spin, making him want to run out of the room and search for her immediately. But he stayed.
"You're lying,"
Aris said, his voice having dropped to a whisper, his face now a full shade paler.
"No, we're not," Newt responded. "Tommy's right. We need to talk. Sounds like we've come from similar places."
"Who's that guy?"
Thomas turned around to see that Min-Ho had returned, a pack of gladers standing behind him on the other side of the doorway. Their faces were scrunched up in disgust at the smell out there, their eyes still full of the terror of seeing what filled the room just behind them.
"Min-Ho, meet Aris,"
Thomas said, taking a step to the side and gesturing toward the other boy. "Aris, meet Min-Ho." Min-Ho stuttered out a few unintelligible words, as if he couldn't quite decide where to start.
"Look," Newt said. "Let's take down these top beds and move them around the room. Then we can sit down and figure out what's bloody going on."
Thomas shook his head.
"No, first we need to go find Teresa. She must be in some other room."
"Isn't one,"
Min-Ho said.
"What do you mean?"
"I just checked this whole place out. There's the big common area, this room, our dorm room, and some seriously shucked doors that lead outside, where we came in from the bus yesterday. Locked and chained from the inside. Doesn't make any sense, but I don't see any other doors or exits."
Thomas shook his head in confusion. It felt like a million spiders had just spun cobwebs through his brain.
"But what about last night? Where'd the food come from? Didn't anyone notice other rooms? A kitchen? Anything?"
He looked around, hoping for an answer, but no one said a word.
"Maybe there's a hidden door," Newt finally said. "Look, we can only do one thing at a time. We need to—"
"No!"
Thomas shouted.
"We've got all day to talk to this Aris guy. The label by the door said Teresa should be here somewhere. We need to find her."
Without waiting for a response, he headed for the door back to the common area, pushing his way past boys until he was through. The smell hit him as if a bucket of raw sewage had been spilled over his head. The bloated and purple bodies hung like carcasses of game set out by hunters to dry. Their lifeless eyes stared back at him. A familiar, sickening tickle of revulsion filled his stomach and triggered his gag reflex. Closing his eyes for a second, he willed his insides to settle. When they finally did, he began his search for some sign of Teresa, concentrating with all his might on not looking at the dead people. But then a horrible thought struck him. What if she... He ran through the room, searching the faces of the bodies. None of them was her. Relief dissolved the fleeting moment of panic, and he focused on the room itself. The walls surrounding the common area were as plain as could be. Smooth plaster painted white, no decoration of any kind. And for some reason, no windows. He walked quickly around its entire circumference, running his left hand along the wall as he did so. He came to the door to the boys' dorm room, went past it, then made it to the big entrance through which they'd come the day before. There had been a torrential downpour at the time, which seemed impossible now, considering the bright sun he'd seen shining behind the crazy man earlier. The entrance, or exit, consisted of two large steel doors, their surfaces a shiny silver. And just like Min-Ho said, a massive chain, with links a full inch thick, had been threaded through the handles on the doors and pulled tight, two big key locks snapped shut to keep it that way. Thomas reached out and pulled on the chains to check their strength. The metal felt cool under his hands, and it didn't give at all. He expected thumps from the other side, cranks trying to get in just as they were at the windows in the dorm room. But the room remained silent. The only sounds were muted and coming from the two dorms, distant shouts and screams from the cranks, and murmurs of conversation from the gladers. Frustrated, Thomas continued his trek along the walls until he made it back to the room that was supposed to be Teresa's. Nothing, not even a crack or seam to indicate another exit. The large room wasn't even a square. It was a big oval, round and cornerless. He was completely perplexed. He thought back to the night before, when they'd all sat there and eaten pizza like the starved people they'd been. Surely they'd seen other doors, a kitchen, something. But the more he thought about it, the more he tried to picture what things had looked like, the fuzzier it became. An alarm went off in his head. Their brains had been tinkered with before. Had it happened again? Had their memories been altered or wiped? And what had happened to Teresa? Desperate, he thought about crawling across the floor to look for a trap door or something, some clue to what had happened. But he couldn't spend another minute with all those rotting bodies. The only thing left was the new kid. He sighed and turned back to the small room where they'd found him. Eris had to know something that would help. Just as Newt had ordered, the top beds had been unhooked from the lower ones and placed around the room against the walls, creating enough space for the 19 other gladers and Eris to sit in a circle, everyone facing each other. When Minho saw Thomas, he patted an empty spot next to him.
"Told you, dude. Have a seat and let's talk. We waited on you, but close that shuck door as much as you can first. Smells worse than galley's rotting feet out there."
Without responding, Thomas pulled the door shut, then walked over and sat down. He wanted to sink his head into his hands, but he didn't. Nothing indicated for sure that any kind of danger threatened Teresa. Something weird was going on, but there could be a million explanations, and plenty of them included her being okay. Newt was one bed to the right, sitting so far forward that just the edge of his butt rested on the mattress.
"All right, let's get started on the bloody storytelling so we can get to the real problem, finding something to eat."
Right on cue, Thomas felt a hunger pang, heard his stomach growl. That problem hadn't even occurred to him yet. Water would be fine, they had the bathrooms, but there was no sign of food anywhere.
"Good that," Minho said. "Talk, Eris. Tell us everything."
The new boy was directly across the room from Thomas. The gladers sitting to each side of the stranger had scooted to the far ends of the bed. Eris shook his head.
"No way. You guys go first."
"Yeah?" Minho responded. "How about we all take turns just beating the living clunk out of your shuck face? Then we'll ask you to talk again."
"Minho," Newt said sternly.
"There's no reason."
Minho pointed sharply at Eris.
"Please, dude. For all we know, this shank could be one of the creators. Somebody from Wicked, here to spy on us. He could have killed those people out there. He's the only one we don't know, and the doors and windows are locked. I'm sick of him acting all snooty when we've got 20 guys to his one. He should talk first."
Thomas groaned on the inside. One thing he knew was that the kid would never open up if Minho terrified him. Newt sighed and looked over at Eris.
"He's got a point. Just tell us what you meant about coming from the bug and maze. That's where we escaped from, and we obviously haven't met you."
Eris rubbed his eyes, then met Newt's gaze.
"Fine. Listen. I was thrown into this gigantic maze made out of huge stone walls. But before that, my memory was erased. I couldn't remember anything about my life from before. I just knew my name. I lived there with a bunch of girls. There must have been 50 of them, and I was the only boy. We escaped a few days ago. The people who helped kept us in a big gym for a few days, then moved me here last night. But no one explained anything. What's this stuff about you being in a maze too?"
Thomas barely heard the last few words of what Eris had said over the sounds of surprise coming from the other gladers. Confusion swirled in his brain. Eris had announced what he'd been through as simply and quickly as describing a trip to the beach. But it seemed crazy. Monumental, if true. Luckily, someone voiced exactly what Thomas was trying to sort out in his mind.
Wait a minute, Newt said.
You lived in a big maze on a farm where walls closed every night. Just you and a few dozen girls. Were there creatures called grievers? Were you the last one to arrive? And did everything go bugging nuts when you did? Did you come in a coma? With a note that said you were the last one ever?
Whoa, whoa, whoa! Eris was saying even before Newt had finished. How do you know all this? How?
It's the same shuck experiment, Minho said, the earlier belligerence gone from his voice.
Or same whatever. But they had all girls and one boy. We had all boys and one girl. Wicked must have built two of those mazes, run two different tests.
Thomas's line of thinking had already accepted that. He finally settled himself enough to speak. He looked at Eris.
Did they call you the Trigger?
Eris nodded, obviously as perplexed as anyone else in the room.
And could you...
Thomas began, but hesitated. He felt like every time he brought this up, he was admitting to the world that he was crazy.
Could you speak to one of those girls inside your mind? You know, like telepathically?
Eris's eyes widened, staring deeply at Thomas as if he'd understood a dark secret that only someone else who shared it could understand.
Can you hear me?
The phrase appeared so clearly inside Thomas's mind that at first he thought Eris had spoken aloud. But no, his lips hadn't moved.
Can you hear me?
The boy repeated. Thomas hesitated, swallowed.
Yes. They killed her,
Eris said back to him.
They killed my best friend.
Chapter 6.
What's going on?
Newt asked, looking back and forth between Thomas and Eris.
Why are you guys looking at each other like you just fell in love?
He can do it too,
Thomas answered, not taking his eyes off the new kid, seeing the others only in his peripheral vision. That final statement by Eris had terrified him. If they'd killed his telepathy partner...
Do what?
Frypan asked.
What do you think?
Minho said.
He's a freak like Thomas. They can talk in each other's heads.
Newt was glaring at Thomas now.
Serious?
Thomas nodded and almost spoke to Eris in his mind again, but said it out loud at the last second.
Who killed her?
What happened?
Who killed who? Minho said. No more of your voodoo clunk while we're around.
Thomas, eyes watering now, finally broke his gaze with Eris and looked over at Minho.
He had someone he could do this with, just like I did. I mean,
do.
But he said they killed her.
I want to know who they are.
Eris's head had dropped. His eyes looked closed from where Thomas sat.
I don't really know who they are. It's too confusing. I couldn't tell the bad guys from the good guys. But I think somehow they made this girl, Beth, stab my friend. Her name was Rachel. She's dead, man. She's dead.
He covered his face with both hands. Thomas felt an almost painful prick of confusion. Everything pointed to Eris's having come from another version of the maze, set up in the same format except with the ratio of girls to boys being switched. But that would make Eris their version of Teresa. And this Beth sounded like their version of Gally, who'd killed Chuck. With a knife. Did that mean that Gally was supposed to have killed Thomas instead? But why was Eris here now? And where was Teresa? Things that had almost started to click in his mind fell apart again.
Well, how'd you end up with us? Newt asked. Where are all these girls you keep talking about? How many of them escaped with you? Did they bring all of you here, or just you?
Thomas couldn't help but feel sorry for Eris. To get grilled with all these questions after something like that had happened. If the roles were switched, if Thomas had seen Teresa get killed. Watching it happen to Chuck had been bad enough.
Bad enough, he thought. Or was seeing Chuck die worse?
Thomas wanted to scream. At that moment, everything in the world just sucked. Eris looked up finally, wiped a couple of tears from his cheeks. He did it without the slightest hint of shame, and Thomas suddenly knew that he liked this kid.
Look, the boy said. I'm just as confused as everyone else. About 30 of us survived. They took us to that gym, fed us, cleaned us up. Then they brought me to this place last night, saying I should be separate, since I'm a guy. That's it. Then you Sticks show up.
Sticks? Minho repeated. Aris shook his head.
Never mind. I don't even know what it means. Just a word they used when I got there.
Minho exchanged a glance with Thomas, half smiling. Looked like both groups had come up with their own vocabulary.
Hey!
One of the gladers Thomas didn't really know called out. He was leaning against the wall behind Aris, pointing at him.
What's that on the side of your neck? Something black right below your collar.
Aris tried to look down, but couldn't bend his neck to see that part of his body.
What?
Thomas saw a dark splotch just above the back neckline of the boy's pajama shirt as he shifted around. It appeared to be a thick line, stretching from the hollow of his collarbone around to his back. And it was broken up, like it might be lettering.
Here, let me look, Newt offered.
He stood from the bed and walked over, his limp, from something in the past he'd never shared with Thomas, showing more than usual. He reached out and pulled Eris's shirt down more so he could see the odd marking better.
It's a tattoo,
Newt said, squinting as if he didn't believe his eyes.
What's it say?
Minho asked, though he'd already gotten up from the bed and approached to get his own look. When Newt didn't answer right away, curiosity forced Thomas to his feet, and soon he was right beside Minho, leaning over to see the tattoo himself. What he saw printed there in blocky letters made his heart skip a beat. Property of Wicked. Group B. Subject B1. The Partner.
What's that supposed to mean?
Minho asked.
What does it say?
Aris asked, reaching around to feel the skin of his neck and shoulders, pulling his shirt collar down.
I swear it wasn't there last night.
Newt repeated the words to him, then said,
Property of Wicked? I thought we'd escaped them. Or you'd escape them too. Whatever.
He turned around, visibly frustrated, and went back to sit down on his bed.
And why would it call you the partner?
Minho said, still staring at the tattoo. Aris shook his head.
I don't have a clue, I swear. And there's no way that was there before last night. I showered, looked in the mirror. I would have seen it. And someone would have noticed it back in the maze for sure.
You're telling me they tattooed you in the middle of the night,
Minho said.
Without you noticing? Come on, dude.
I swear,
Aris insisted. Then he got up and went to the bathroom, probably to try to see the words for himself.
I don't believe a shuck word he says,
Minho whispered to Thomas on his way back to his seat. Then, just as he leaned forward to plop back down on the mattress, his shirt shifted enough to reveal a thick line of black on his neck.
Whoa!
Thomas said. For a second, he was too stunned to move.
What?
Minho asked, looking at Thomas as if he just sprouted a third ear on his forehead.
Your neck, Thomas finally got out. You have it on your neck, too.
What the shuck you talking about?
Minho said, pulling at his shirt, face scrunched up as he struggled to see something he couldn't. Thomas ran over to Minho, slapped his hands away, then pulled the neckline of the shirt back.
Holy, it's right there. Same thing, except...
Thomas read the words to himself.
Property of Wicked. Group A, Subject A7. The leader.
What, dude?
Minho yelled at him. Most of the other gladers had gathered in a tight group behind Thomas, squeezing in to get a look. Thomas quickly read the tattooed words out loud, surprised he did it without stumbling on them.
You're kidding me, man.
Minho said, standing up. He pushed his way through the crowd of boys to follow Aris to the bathroom. And then the frenzy began. Thomas felt his own shirt tugged down as he pulled at others. Everyone started talking over everyone else.
They all say Group A, property of Wicked, just like his.
You're Subject A13,
Subject A19,
A3,
A10.
Thomas was slowly turning in a circle, dazed as he watched the gladers discover the tattoos on each other. Most of them didn't have the additional designations like Eris and Min-Ho, just the property line. Newt was going from boy to boy, looking for himself, his face set in stone as if he were concentrating on memorizing the names and numbers. Then, quite by accident, the two of them stood facing each other.
"What does mine say?" Newt asked.
Thomas pulled the neckline of Newt's shirt to the side, then leaned over to read the words etched into his skin.
"You're subject A5, and they called you the glue."
Newt gave him a startled look.
"The glue?"
Thomas let go of his shirt and stepped back.
"Yeah, probably because you're kind of the glue that holds us all together. I don't know. Read mine." "I already did."
Thomas noticed that an odd expression had come over Newt's face. One of hesitation, or dread, like he didn't want to tell Thomas what his tattoo said.
"Well?" "You're subject A2, Newt answered.
Then he lowered his eyes.
"And?"
Thomas pushed. Newt hesitated, then answered without looking at him.
"It doesn't call you anything. It just says to be killed by Group B."
Chapter 7. Thomas didn't really have time to process what Newt had said. He was actually trying to decide whether he was more confused or scared when a clanging bell began ringing throughout the room. He instinctively put his hands to his ears and looked around at the others. He noticed the perplexed recognition on their faces, and then it hit him. It was the same sound he'd heard back in the maze right before Teresa had shown up in the box. That was the only time he'd heard it, and trapped within the confines of a small room, it was different, stronger, laced with overlapping echoes. Still, he was pretty sure it was the same. It was the alarm used in the glade to announce that a newbie had arrived. And it wasn't stopping. Thomas already felt a headache forming behind his eyes. The gladers milled about the room, gawking at the walls and the roof as if they were trying to figure out the source of the noise. Some of them sat down on the beds, hands pressed to the sides of their heads. Thomas tried to find the source of the alarm as well, but couldn't see anything. No speakers, no heating or air conditioning vents in the walls, nothing. Just a sound coming from everywhere at once. Newt grabbed his arm, shouted in his ear,
"It's the bloody newbie alarm!"
"I know!
Why is it ringing?"
Thomas shrugged, hoping his face didn't betray how annoyed he was. How was he supposed to know what was going on? Min-Ho and Eris had reappeared from the bathroom, both of them absently rubbing the backs of their necks as they searched the room for answers. It didn't take long for them to realize that the others had similar tattoos. Frypan had walked over to the door leading back out to the common room and was just about to touch the palm of his hand to the spot where the broken handle used to be.
"Wait!"
Thomas shouted on impulse. He ran over to join Frypan at the door, sensing Newt right behind him.
"Why?"
Frypan asked, his hand still hovering just inches from the door.
"I don't know,"
Thomas replied, not sure if he could even be heard over the clanging sounds.
"It's an alarm. Maybe something really bad is happening."
"Yeah,"
Frypan yelled back.
"And maybe we need to get out of here."
Without waiting to see what Thomas said, he pushed the door. When it didn't move, he pushed harder. When it still didn't budge, he leaned up against it with his full weight, shoulder first. Nothing. It was closed as tight as if it were bricked shut.
"You broke the shuck handle!"
Frypan screamed, then slapped the door with the palm of his hand. Thomas didn't want to shout anymore. He was tired, and his throat hurt. He turned and leaned back against the wall, folded his arms. Most of the gladers seemed as run down as Thomas, sick of looking for answers or a way out. All of them were either sitting on the beds or standing around with blank expressions on their faces. Out of desperation more than anything, Thomas called to Teresa again, then several times more. But she didn't respond, and with all the blaring noise, he didn't know if he could have focused enough to hear her anyway. He still felt her absence. It was like waking up one day with no teeth in your mouth. You wouldn't need to run to the mirror to know they were gone. Then the alarm stopped. Never before had silence seemed to have its own sound. Like a buzzing hive of bees, it settled on the room with ferocity, making Thomas reach up and wiggle a finger in each ear. Every breath, every sigh in the room was like an explosion compared to the bizarre haze of quiet. Newt was the first one to speak.
"Don't tell me we're still going to get bloody newbies thrown in our laps."
"Where's the box in this shuck place?" Minho muttered sarcastically.
A slight creak made Thomas look sharply over at the door to the common area. It had swung open several inches, a slice of darkness marking where it now stood ajar. Someone had turned off the lights on the other side. Frypan backed up a step.
"Guessing they want us to go out there now," Minho said. "Then why don't you go first?" Frypan offered.
Minho had already started moving.
"No problem. Maybe we'll have a new little shank to pick on and kick in the butt when we got nothing else to do."
He made it to the door, then paused and looked sideways at Thomas. His voice turned surprisingly soft.
"We could use another chuck."
Thomas knew he shouldn't have been upset. If anything, Minho was trying, in his own strange way, to show that he missed Chuck just as much as everyone else. But being reminded of his friend, and at such an odd moment, made Thomas angry. Instinct told him to ignore it. He was having a hard enough time dealing with the things going on around him. He needed to separate himself from his feelings for a while and just move forward, step by step. Figure it all out.
"Yeah," he finally said.
"You going through or you need me to go first?"
"What did your tattoo say?"
Minho responded quietly, ignoring Thomas's question.
"Doesn't matter. Let's go out there."
Minho nodded, still not looking directly at him. Then he smiled, and whatever had been troubling him so deeply appeared to vanish, replaced by his usual laid-back attitude.
"Good that. If some zombie starts eating my leg, save me."
"Deal."
Thomas wanted him to hurry and get on with it. He knew they were on the edge of yet another great change in their ridiculous journey, and he didn't want to draw it out any longer. Minho pushed open the door. The single bar of blackness became a wide swath of it, the common area now as dark as it had been when they'd first left the boys' dorm. Minho stepped through the doorway, and Thomas followed right on his heels.
"Wait here," Minho whispered. "No need playing bumper cars with dead folks again. Let me find the light switches first."
"Why would they have turned them off?" Thomas asked.
"I mean, who turned them off?"
Minho looked back at him. The light from Eris's room spilled across his face, illuminating the smirk set firmly there.
"Why do you even bother asking questions, dude? Nothing has ever made sense, and it probably never will. Now slim it and sit still."
Minho was quickly swallowed by the darkness. Thomas heard his soft footsteps on the carpet and the swish sound of his hand running along the wall as he walked.
"Here they are,"
he shouted from the spot that seemed about right to Thomas. A few clicks sounded, and then lights blazed throughout the room. For the tiniest fraction of a second, Thomas didn't realize what was so starkly different about the place, but then it hit him, and as if that awakened his other senses as well, he realized that the horrible smell of rotting corpses had vanished. And now he knew why. The bodies were gone, with no sign that they'd ever been there in the first place. Chapter 8. Several seconds passed before Thomas realized he'd stopped breathing. Sucking in a deep pull of air, he gaped at the now empty room. No bloated, purpled-skinned bodies. No stink. Newt nudged past him, walking forward with his slight limp until he stood in the very center of the room's carpeted floor.
"This is impossible," he said,
turning in a slow circle, gazing up at the ceiling where the corpses had hung from ropes only minutes earlier.
"Not enough time has passed for someone to get them out. And no one else even came into this buggin' room. We would have heard them."
Thomas stepped to the side and leaned against the wall as the other gladers and Eris came out of the small dorm room.
A hushed sense of awe spread across the group as one by one, each person noticed the missing dead. As for Thomas, he once again felt a numbness, like he just might be done feeling surprised at anything.
"You're right," Minho said to Newt. "We were in there with the door closed for, what, 20 minutes? No way anyone could have moved all those bodies that quickly. Plus, this place is locked from the inside."
"Not to mention getting rid of the smell," Thomas added. Minho nodded.
"Well, you shanks are right smart," Frypan said through a huff. "But take a look around. They're gone. So whatever you think, somehow they got rid of them."
Thomas didn't feel like arguing about it or even talking about it. So the dead bodies were gone. They'd seen stranger stuff.
"Hey," Winston said, "those crazy people quit screaming and yelling."
Thomas put his weight back on his feet, listened. Silence. "I thought we just couldn't hear them from Eris's room, but you're right. They stopped." Soon everyone was running for the larger dorm room on the far side of the common area. Thomas followed, intensely curious to look out the windows and see the world outside. Before, with the cranks screaming and pressing their faces against the iron bars, he'd been too horrified to get a good view.
"No way!"
Minho yelled from up ahead, then, without further explanation, disappeared inside the room. As Thomas moved in that direction, he noticed that every boy hesitated a second, wide-eyed at the threshold of the door, then went ahead and entered the dorm. He waited as each Glader and then Eris funneled their way inside, then followed. He felt the same shock he'd sensed from the other boys. As a whole, the room looked much like it had when they'd walked out of it earlier. But there was one monumental difference. At each window, without exception, a red brick wall had been erected just outside the iron bars, completely blocking every inch of open space. The only light in the room came from the panels on the ceiling.
"Even if they were quick with those bodies," Newt said, "I'm pretty sure they didn't have time to bloody throw up some brick walls. What's going on here?"
Thomas watched as Minho walked over to one of the windows and reached through the bars, pressing his hand against the red bricks.
"Solid," he said, then slapped at it.
"It doesn't even look fresh," Thomas murmured, stepping up to one himself to get a feel. "Hard and cool.
The mortar's dry. Somehow they've tricked us, that's all."
"Tricked us?"
Frypan asked.
"How?"
Thomas shrugged, that numbness returning, still wishing desperately that he could talk to Teresa.
"I don't know.
Remember the cliff? We jumped into thin air and went through an invisible hole. Who knows what these people can do?" The next half hour passed in a haze. Thomas wandered about, as did everyone else, inspecting the brick walls, looking for signs of anything else that had changed. Several things had, each one just as strange as the next. All the beds in the Glader's dorm room were made, and there was no sign of the grungy clothes they'd all worn before changing into the pajamas provided the night before. The dressers had been rearranged, though the difference was subtle, and some people disagreed that they'd been moved at all. Either way, each one had been stocked with fresh clothes and shoes, and new digital watches for each boy. But the biggest change of all, discovered by Minho, was the sign outside the room where they'd found Eris. Instead of saying, "Teresa Agnes, Group A, Subject A1, the betrayer," it now said, "Eris Jones, Group B, Subject B1, the partner." Everyone observed the new plaque, then wandered away, but Thomas found himself standing in front of it, unable to remove his eyes. To Thomas, it felt like the new label made it official. Teresa had been taken from him, replaced by Eris. None of it made sense, and none of it mattered anymore. He went back to the boys' dorm, found the cot he'd slept on during the night, or at least the one he thought he'd slept on, and lay down, putting the pillow over his head, as if that would make everyone else go away. What had happened to her? What had happened to them? Where were they? What were they supposed to do? And the tattoos? Turning his head to the side, then his whole body, he squeezed his eyes shut and folded his arms tightly, pulling his legs up until he lay in the fetal position.
Then, determined to keep trying until he heard back from her, he called out with his thoughts. Teresa? A pause. Teresa? A longer pause. Teresa! He shouted it mentally, his whole body tensing with the effort. Teresa, where are you? Please answer me. Why aren't you trying to contact me? Get out of my head! The words exploded inside his mind, so vivid and so strangely audible within his skull that he felt lances of pain behind his eyes and in his ears. He sat up in bed, then stood. It was her. It was definitely her. Teresa? He pressed the first two fingers of both hands against his temples. Teresa? Whoever you are, get out of my shuck head! Thomas stumbled backward until he sat down once again on the bed. His eyes were closed as he concentrated. Teresa, what are you talking about? It's me, Thomas. Where are you? Shut up! It was her, he had no doubt, but her mental voice was full of fear and anger. Just shut up! I don't know who you are. Leave me alone. But, Thomas began, completely at a loss. Teresa, what's wrong? She paused before answering, as if collecting her thoughts, and when she finally spoke again, Thomas sensed an almost disturbing calm in her.
Leave me alone, or I'll hunt you down and cut your throat. I swear it.
And then she was gone. Despite her warning, he tried calling for her again, but the same emptiness he'd felt since that morning returned, her presence having vanished. Thomas fell back on the bed, something horrible burning through his body. He quickly buried his head in the pillow again and cried for the first time since Chuck had been killed. But the words from the label outside her door, the betrayer, kept popping up in his mind. Each time, he pushed them away. Amazingly, no one bothered him or asked him what was wrong. His stifled sobs finally faded into an occasional hitched breath, and eventually he fell asleep. Once again, he dreamed. He's a little older this time, probably 7 or 8. A very bright light hovers above his head like magic. People in strange green suits and funny glasses keep peeking at him, their heads momentarily blocking the brilliance that shines down. He can see their eyes, but nothing else. Their mouths and noses are covered by masks. Thomas is somehow both himself at that age and yet, as before, observing as an outsider. But he feels the boy's fear. People are talking, voices muted and dull. Some are men, some are women. But he can't tell which is which or who is who. He can't understand much of it at all. Only glimpses, fragments of conversation, all of it terrifying.
We'll have to cut deeper with him and the girl.
Can their brains handle this?
This is so amazing, you know? The flare is rooted inside him.
He might die.
Or worse, he might live.
He hears one last thing, finally something that doesn't make him shiver in disgust or fright.
Or he and the others might save us. Save us all.
Chapter 9. When he woke up, his head felt like several chunks of ice had been hammered through his ears and into his brain. Wincing, he reached up to rub his eyes and was hit by a wave of nausea that sent the room tilting around him. Then he remembered the terrible things Teresa had said, then the short dream, and misery engulfed him. Who had those people been? Was it real? What had they meant when they'd said those awful things about his brain?
Glad to see you still know how to take a nap.
Thomas peeked through a squint and saw Newt standing next to his bed, staring down at him.
How long's it been?
Thomas asked, forcing thoughts of Teresa and the dream, memory, into a dark corner of his mind to agonize over later. Newt looked at his watch.
Couple hours. When people noticed you lie down, it actually kind of relaxed everyone. Not much we can do but sit and wait for something new to happen. There's no way out of this place.
Thomas tried not to groan as he scooted himself into a sitting position, his back against the wall at the head of his bed. Do we even have any food?
No, but I'm pretty sure these people wouldn't go through all this trouble to bring us here, trick us, or whatever they've done, just to let us bug and starve to death. Something will happen.
Reminds me of when they sent the first group of us to the glade. The initial group of me and Albi and Minho and some others. The original gladers. He said that last part with a not-so-subtle burst of sarcasm. Thomas was intrigued, surprised he'd never before dug into what that had been like. How does this remind you of that? Newt's gaze was focused on the brick wall outside the closest window. We all woke up in the middle of the day, lying on the ground around the doors to the box. It was closed. Our memories had been wiped, just like yours when you came. You'd be surprised at how quickly we pulled ourselves together and quit panicking. There were about 30 of us. Obviously, we had no bloody clue what had happened, how we'd gotten there, what we were supposed to do. And we were terrified, disoriented. But since we were all in the same crappy situation, we organized ourselves and figured out the place. Had the full farm running within days. Everybody with their own job. Thomas was relieved that the pain in his skull had diminished. And he was intrigued to hear about the start of the glade. The scattered pieces of the puzzle brought back by the changing weren't nearly enough to form solid memories. Did the creators have everything in place already? Crops, animals, all that? Newt nodded, still staring at the bricked-up window.
Yeah, but it took a ton of work to get it going nice and smooth. A lot of trial and error before we accomplished anything.
So, how does this remind you of that? Thomas asked again. Finally, Newt looked at him.
I guess back then, we all just had a sense that there was obviously a purpose to us having been sent there. If someone had wanted to kill us, why wouldn't they have just killed us? Why would they send us to a huge place with a house and a barn and animals? And because we had no other choice, we accepted it and started working and exploring.
But we're already done exploring here, Thomas countered. No animals, no food, no maize.
Yeah, but come on. It's the same concept. We're obviously here for a buggin' purpose. We'll figure it out eventually.
If we don't starve first. Newt pointed at the bathroom.
We've got plenty of water, so it'll be at least a few days before we drop dead. Something'll happen.
Deep down, Thomas believed it too, and was only arguing to solidify it in his own mind. But what about all those dead people we saw? Maybe they rescued us for real, got killed, and now we're screwed. Maybe we were supposed to do something, but now it's all been messed up and we've been left here to die. Newt burst out laughing.
You're one depressing piece of clunk, Slinthead.
Nah, with all these corpses magically disappearing in the brick walls, I'd say this is something more like the maze. Weird and impossible to explain. The latest and greatest mystery. Maybe our next test, who knows? Whatever's going on, we'll have a chance, just like we did in the bloody maze. I guarantee it.
Yeah, Thomas murmured, wondering if he should share what he'd dreamed about. Deciding to save it for later, he said, Hope you're right. As long as no grievers suddenly show up, we'll be good. Newt was already shaking his head by the time Thomas finished.
Please, man. Careful what you bug and wish for. Maybe they'll send something worse.
The image of Teresa popped into Thomas's mind just then, and he lost all desire to talk.
Who's the cheerful one now? He forced himself to say.
You got me, Newt replied, then stood up. Guess I'll go bug somebody else till the excitement begins, which better be bloody soon. I'm hungry.
Careful what you wish for.
Good that.
Newt walked away, and Thomas scooted down to lie on his back, staring at the bottom of the bunk above him. He closed his eyes after a while, but when he saw Teresa's face in the darkness of his thoughts, he opened them right up again. If he was going to get through this, he'd have to try to forget about her for now. Hunger. It's like an animal trapped inside you, Thomas thought. After 3 full days of not eating, it felt like a vicious, gnawing, dull-clawed animal was trying to burrow its way out of his stomach. He felt it every second of every minute of every hour. He drank water as often as possible from the sinks in the bathroom, but it did nothing to drive the beast away.
If anything, it felt like he was making the thing stronger so it could inflict more misery within. The others felt it too, even if most of them kept their complaints to themselves. Thomas watched as they walked around, heads hung low, jaws slack, as if every step burned 1,000 calories. People licked their lips a lot. They grabbed at their stomachs, pushed on them as if trying to calm that gnawing beast. Unless they were going to the bathroom to use it or to get a drink, the gladers didn't move at all. Like Thomas, they just lay there on the bunk beds, limp, skin pale, eyes sunken. Thomas felt all this like a festering disease, and seeing the others only made it worse, a stark reminder that this wasn't something he could just ignore, that it was real, and death waited just around the corner. Listless sleep, bathroom, water, trudge back to bed. Listless sleep, without any more of the memory dreams he'd experienced. It became a horrendous cycle, broken up only by thoughts of Teresa, her harsh words to him the only thing that lightened the prospect of death, even if only a little. She'd been the only thing he could grasp for hope after the maze and Chuck's death. And now she was gone. There was no food, and 3 long days had passed. Hunger. Misery. He'd quit bothering to look at his watch. It only made time drag and reminded his body how long it had been since he'd eaten. But he thought it was roughly mid-afternoon of the 3rd day when a humming sound abruptly began from the common area. He stared at the door leading out there, knew he should get up and go check it out. But his mind had already been slipping into another one of those hazy half-naps, the world around him foggy. Maybe he'd imagined it. But then he heard it again. He told himself to get up. He fell asleep instead. Thomas! It was Minho's voice, weak but stronger than it had been the last time he'd heard it.
Thomas! Dude, wake up!
Thomas opened his eyes, amazed he'd survived another nap without dying. Things were blurry for a second, and at first he didn't believe that what he thought was just a few inches from his face was real. But then its image sharpened, and the red roundness of it, with flecks of green scattered across its shiny surface, made him feel like he was looking on heaven itself. An apple.
Where'd you...
He didn't bother to finish, those 2 words alone sapping his strength.
Just eat it,
Minho said, followed by a wet crunch. Thomas glanced up to see his friend munching on his own apple. Then, drawing the last remnants of energy from somewhere deep inside himself, he pushed himself up onto an elbow and grabbed the fruit lying on the bed. He lifted it to his mouth and took a small bite. The burst of flavor and juice was a glorious thing. Moaning, he attacked the rest of it and had eaten down to its stumpy core before Minho had even finished his, despite the head start.
Slim yourself nice and calm, Minho said. Eat like that and you'll just throw it right back up. Here's another one. Try slowing down this time.
He handed a second apple to Thomas, who took it without saying thank you, and chomped a big bite. As he chewed, resolving to swallow before stuffing another chunk in his mouth, he realized he could actually feel the first traces of energy trickling through his body.
This is so good, he mumbled. This is so shuckin' good. You still sound like an idiot when you use glader words,
Minho responded before taking another bite of his apple. Thomas ignored him.
Where'd these come from?
Minho hesitated in the middle of chewing, then resumed.
Found them out in the common room, along with something else. Shanks, who found it all, claimed they'd just looked a few minutes earlier and nothing had been there. But whatever, I don't care.
Thomas swung his legs off the bed and sat up.
What else did they find?
Minho took a bite, then nodded toward the door.
Go look for yourself.
Thomas rolled his eyes and slowly stood up. The miserable weakness was still there, like most of his insides had been sucked right out, and all he had left were a few bones and tendons to hold himself erect. But he steadied, feeling even after a few seconds that he was already better than the last time he'd made the long, lifeless trek to the bathroom. Once he thought he had his balance, he walked over to the door and entered the common area.
Only 3 days before, the room had been filled with dead bodies. Now it was crowded with gladers picking things off a big pile of food that had seemingly been dumped there without any order. Fruit, vegetables, small packages. But he'd barely registered this when an even more bizarre sight on the far side of the room caught his attention. He reached out to steady himself on the wall behind him. A large wooden desk had been placed opposite the door to the other dorm room. Behind the desk, a thin man in a white suit sat in a chair, his feet propped up and crossed at the ankles. The man was reading a book.